Welcome to Picnic Climbers, a podcast for those who love getting outside,
going on epic adventures,
or chill ones,
and don't take themselves too seriously. Join us, Nate and Mo,
as we share our escapades into the great outdoors.
And don't forget the beer, eh? Hello, Picnic Climbers. Welcome back to another episode of Picnic Climbers podcast. We are excited to talk to you today. How are you, my dear?
How are we doing, my dear? We're doing good. The sun is streaming in the window currently and making the room feel a lot warmer than it actually is outside.
Yeah, so we're start of April. We've just had Easter, was last weekend, and we had a couple of days of lovely warm weather, didn't we?
Yeah, like 21 degrees, and then it plummeted to like 2 degrees.
And it snowed again.
It snowed again. Like actual stick on the ground, still there the next morning snow.
Which
it's gone now.
Coincided very well with us being allowed to have barbecues outside.
Yeah.
But there we are.
Our poor son. You know when spring first, like you first feel the warmth and you're like, right, it's spring. I don't care if winter tries to come back, but I'm putting the winter clothes away and we're going on spring adventures, long walks. And we've definitely been in that mindset. And yesterday we went on a very sunny walk.
It was sunny.
Thinking it's gorgeous out. It's been, you know, in the 20s. Like, it at least it'll be warm enough to go for a walk. But it was cold. Bitterly cold because of the wind. And our poor little son. We bundled him up so much, to be fair. And he didn't end up just sleeping. I think he was nice and warm and sleeping. But
that's
his
coping mechanism. Yeah. He falls asleep.
He was not happy with the wind in his face. Poor little guy.
No.
Yeah, and we were imagining, oh, we'll find somewhere pretty, have a nice picnic. We brought a little blanket to spread him out on and play in the sunshine. And that did not happen. We marched. But there you are.
Yeah. It'll get better. It'll get warmer. But until
then. Better.
Until then, little buddy needs to toughen up.
Aw, poor little buddy. Yeah, no. We do have to, you know, for every big adventure that we go on, we have to have, like, a cozy at-home day. He's such a happy-go-lucky guy, though. He forgets instantly. Like, even he by does. The time we get to the car, he's happy and smiling.
Yeah.
All laughs all around. It's fine. He's doing really well.
Yeah, he is. I found a new podcast.
Yes, you did.
I did. I'm listening to The Enemy.
To the end. Oh, I thought that was the name of the podcast. I was like, I don't remember that.
No, it's another.
A different outdoor podcast.
It's another podcast. And no, it's, I keep calling it, oh, it's the Alex Honnold podcast. It's the Alex Honnold podcast, which is not. He's just one of the kind of co-presenters on it. It's quite enjoyable. You have to skip past the ads. But it's called Climbing Gold.
This is not an ad, also.
This is not an ad. I just quite enjoyed it. And it's this guy named Fitzcarhall, who is the producer of the Dirtbag Diaries podcast, which I think is quite successful outdoors podcast. Not that I've ever listened to it. There we are. And he has Alex Honnold alongside him. And they pretty much just interview some of the climbing legends of the last generation and tell their story. And it's really interesting. I've listened to an episode and a half, and in the first one it was all about like the free soloers that pretty much inspired Alex and who kind of set the bar for him to then go on and do what he did.
If you don't know who Alex Honnold is, we'll get to there, but he's an amazing climber who we've been following his career, I guess, for quite a few years now, and it recently came into, I guess, public knowledge, mainstream media by a documentary that he was in. But yeah, he's quite the lovable character.
Yeah. But anyway, so it's quite a good one. I quite enjoyed it. I listened to it on my long run the other day. But there we are.
There we are. Okay, so what are we talking about today, Nathan?
Well, this episode is titled Picnic Climbers Take on the Big Screen. And I suppose it's a bit of a play on words, isn't it, really? Because
we've made it big.
We've made it big.
And we're starring in...
And this is us announcing our new feature-length documentary as we take on the big screen and seek the best documentary Oscar.
I feel like this isn't as funny as we think it is. It is so, obviously not that.
That is the title, Picnic Climbers Take on the Big Screen, but I think it's actually the Picnic Climbers Take on the Big Screen. And what I mean by that is, what are our favourite climbing documentaries?
Oh, guys, we've been in lockdown too long. We think the simplest replies extraordinarily clever. So here we are. We're going to talk about our favorite
climbing movies.
Climbing movies.
And I suppose, you know, you could say, oh, when do you know that you're kind of past your peak in your climbing days? And I think it's when the list of climbing films that you've watched is longer than the list of climbs you've done in a particular season. Which is maybe true for us currently.
Very sad.
But hopefully not forever.
No, hopefully not.
Anyway, we love climbing adventure sport documentaries.
Yeah.
And there are so many available these days on, whether it's Amazon Prime, Disney Plus, Netflix, and so on. So here are some of our favorites. Yeah. Give you some I feel like Netflix I have to, recommendations.
Yeah, there you go. And I was going to say, we give some context. We love to follow an adventure day with an adventure film because it inspires us for the next one. So often if we've had a big day out doing any sort of activity, and often they don't coincide. I think when we do a couple days of climbing, we'd like to come home and watch a climbing film. But even if we're out snowshoeing, sometimes you come home and you watch a running documentary. If we're out hiking, we like to come home and watch a skiing documentary. It doesn't matter. It's just beautiful films of the great outdoors that inspire us to get out again. Yeah.
And you feel super tired.
Yeah, your body's a little bit sore. So you can you feel like you can relate to these people, even though they're in a totally different league. But hey ho, it's a good time.
We put a frozen pizza in the oven.
That's classic.
Grab a beer. A few beers. And we're happy and ready to go.
Oh, we're such a dirtbags.
There we go. So anyway, so here are some of our favorites. So let us begin with Valley Uprising.
If you are an aspiring climber and you feel like you want to know something about the history of the sport, that's the one to go to.
It's really good. It's really well done.
Yeah. So I could watch it again and again. It's very funny.
Yeah. So you say it's the history of the sport. What's kind of the setting for it?
It's all about the climbers in Yosemite, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Kind of from the first climbers who did aid climbing. So didn't kind of just use their hands and feet. It was pre-rock climbing shoe
It goes back to the 50s.
Yeah, so it's just hiking boots and tons of rope systems where they use ropes and things to make ladders and all these things. Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy. And gear is ridiculously heavy. And they were just these hardcore mountain men, grizzly, and normally middle-aged or older, it seems like. And then it kind of goes up through the decades until kind of modern, intense sport climbing where boundaries are just being broken all over the place with these guys. And it's narrated really funny, and it covers all sorts of things like illegal base jumping, where people would be flinging themselves off the rock and then have to ditch the parachute and take off because police would be waiting for them at the bottom, and that's hilarious. And what else? That famous guy who has a cardboard sign and is like, we'll belay for food. And Fred literally Becky. Yeah, he's living in Yosemite just bumming off other climbers. And living off of rice.
I don't think he's
rice.
Actually in it.
Is he not in it?
I don't think he's
in it. Oh dear. We'll come back to him. We love him.
No, there's the plane that crashes. The drug cartel plane that crashes.
Oh my goodness.
And they all go and find Stash.
It's just a mess. Yeah.
Anyway. What I think that the film does really well, and what I really enjoy about it is, it's done in such a way, it took me a while, I think almost my second time of watching it, to realize actually how little video footage there is. So much of it is just photographs and it's
and graphics.
Well,
I feel like
it.
Yeah, really,
the graphics really make it, and it's very artfully done, and it's really, really enjoyable and really, really good, and like you say, goes through the decades of kind of how each generation was able to push the envelope in Yosemite, and how that then kind of sent shockwaves through the rest of the climbing world.
Yeah,
so it's a great place to start.
10 out of 10.
Right, then what's the next one?
We watched this last night.
We did watch this last night.
It's we've watched it before, but it's called The Dawn Wall.
Yeah. So this is another Yosemite one.
It is.
So The Dawn Wall is on El Capitan, which is the tallest cliff in Yosemite. And the Dawn Wall is the one that gets the first light in the morning.
Yeah,
and
hence the name.
And for throughout all the decades, the Dawn Wall has always been seen as the kind of the hardest, and it was seen as the wall that didn't really have any potential for a free
so
climbing
blank.
Route up
yeah.
on it.
Yeah.
There was like it was you could the guys at aid climbed it, but it like the to do a route from bottom to top without the use of aid gear, just your hands and feet, was deemed impossible for quite some time. So the Dawnwall, the film, tells the story of Tommy Caldwell and his climbing partner, Kevin Jorgensen, who do the first free ascent of the Dawnwall.
Yeah, it's really inspiring. It follows Tommy's kind of history as well and his backstory into climbing, which is really cute. He's kind of this dorky kid that had a hard time fitting in as a kid, so his dad just dragged him out into the back country he says the word, I thought of it as resilience, but Tommy's like, yeah, he pretty much let me suffer. And he takes this little kid that was having a hard time and makes him into this crazy epic outdoorsman who has crashed all sorts of boundaries. And yeah, we followed him for a while too. I still follow him. He's got two adorable kids now. But anyway, no spoilers, but it's just really impressive, isn't it? And gorgeous. Anything set in Yosemite is beautiful to watch.
Yeah. It's just a really enjoyable one, I think, in like the struggles of climbing as a pair and just it's an incredible 6-year journey for them. So definitely worth a watch there. And that one's a really good one.
Yeah.
One more Yosemite one. We could not not mention this one.
Oh, man. Okay, so this is the one that's made it big in the last few years in the media, and the one that we were talking about earlier with Alex Honnold. It's called Free Solo. So, yeah, it won tons of awards, BAFTA, other things. They had a massive press tour and were winning all over the place. But it's Jimmy Chin. He's also a rock climber, amazing rock climber, and a good friend of Alex's. And he and somebody else, oh, no, we should know who that is. Look it up.
His wife?
Yeah, I think so. Jimmy Chin and his wife Elizabeth made this documentary. And so it covers Alex Honnold's free solo of Al Kep with extremely hard climbs. So a free solo, free climbing is where you have a harness, rope, etc., but the rope is only there to catch you. So you can fall and it is safe, but you don't rely on the rope. So that's why it's called free climbing. You're only using your hands and feet to get up. So that's what the other guys did that we just talked about. But Alex takes it to the next level and free solos. So he free climbs just using his hand and feet, but the solo bit is without the use of a partner, which means he has no rope. He doesn't wear harness or anything. It's just him, and up he goes. And it is terrifying. So he's going up this, how many meters is it?
About 3,000
feet. Yeah, 3,000 feet. Yeah, 1,000 meters. So many, many, many pitches. And he just climbs it up it with his hands and feet.
Yeah.
And it is heart-stopping. Like, you know he makes it because he goes on press tours and obviously it's a happy ending. You know that. You know that watching it. And yet, we saw it in theaters and my palms were sweating and I was stressing for him and I felt bad for his girlfriend and I was just like, I was freaking out, man. It's really intense.
I think what it does really well is, I mean, firstly, it's visually stunning. Again, it's set in Yosemite, so beautiful, beautiful scenery. It's, you know, incredible athletic feat. And so from that sense, it's a really exciting watch. But the other thing that I think that they do really well with it is they really explore the ethics, not only of him climbing on his own and his family and his friends having to watch and you know, the very real possibility that he does slip and does fall, but also the ethics of actually shooting the documentary itself. Yeah. And you know, here these guys are encouraging him and pushing him in and trying to make money off of this incredibly dangerous feat. I mean, you know, the route that he does, free rider, is 513A at the when just I was
elite climbing.
Yeah, like most people, if you have to really be either gifted or train incredibly hard to get even to 512, let alone 513. So what he's doing without ropes, with zero margin for error, most people in there, most climbers wouldn't dream of ever doing at all.
Yeah.
So it's incredible, incredible story.
It is. Whew. So those also, he's just such a funny guy to watch. He's got such a funny take on life. I feel like climbing documentaries are the best because nobody goes into climbing to get famous. Mm-hmm. There are much more like elite kind of in the public eye sports that get attention. Whereas climbing, I feel like if you're in the climbing world, you know, you maybe know these names, and if you're not, it's only when these hit mainstream media that you mm-hmm. that you really even know them. So they're not these media trained personalities. They're just hilarious.
Yeah,
and they always seem so surprised that anyone cares what they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, they're really great people to just have a little window into their lives.
Yeah, so those three are all Yosemite-based and all very well done, very good. There's two that are more mountaineering-based. The first one is probably less well-known than the second, but I really, really enjoyed it when we watched it. It's called Meru, which is the name of a mountain in the Himalayas. And this film was shot over multiple years. It follows three guys: Conrad Anker, Jimmy Chin, who's the documentary maker, who's the one who did Free Solo, and Renan Ozturk. And it's these three guys' attempt at getting the first ascent on a new route up Meru. Yeah, so I think what this documentary does really well, I mean, again, it's beautiful scenery, but like they're in the middle of nowhere, completely on their own, and it. Given that they're filming themselves doing it, the footage that they've got is really good, really high quality. And I think what really comes across in this is like I say, because it takes multiple years, and them, you know, I guess spoiler alert, they don't make it on the first attempt. The documentary really shows the obsession that they had with kind of with this wall and the dedication that they needed to show to actually succeed.
Yeah.
It also just shows like the super gnarly, super isolating experiences of a first ascent on a mountain that's so far away from civilization.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. It gives another, I guess, angle into this kind of thing. Like you just said, that the kind of the non-successful bit. I think lots of documentaries are made of success stories. Obviously, who wants to watch a failure? Not that this was, but yeah, you often just see them make it and you see how tough it is, but you see kind of these amazing feats that are completed and it's happy and joyful, and you forget how much work and effort and loneliness and just time gets put into these things. And I think it's always with outdoor pursuits and you know, breaking barriers and boundaries and pushing limits, it's just always begs the question why. And I think all of these documentaries, you finish them and you're like, wow, but also you're like, but why? It hurts so much. Yeah. I don't get it.
And it's just such a sacrifice as well.
But then it's humans pushing boundaries, which humans have always done and will always do. Mm. And so if you look at it from that, it makes all the sense in the world.
I used to think I wanted to get into mountaineering, and I would still probably jump at the chance of trying it. But when I see like particularly things like Meru, and just how far out they have to go, how the length of time they have to devote to it, and just for me, I feel like I would just, you know, yes, they're with two, you know, these guys were with two other people, so it was the three of them. But in many ways, I think it would just be a bit lonely. Like, you know, you're in the middle of the mountains, days and days and days away from anybody. I think it would just be a bit lonely.
Yeah. Well, and if the weather's bad, you just sit in your tent that day. You're like, oh, darn, we'll try again tomorrow.
Yeah, which
it's not like you have service. Can't pull up Netflix.
No, I know, but it's not like I don't think, oh, I wouldn't want to do it because I'd get bored. I think it's just like that feeling of being so far away and so on your own. And because I used to work as a field assistant for a geologist for a few months, and we would spend multiple weeks where we would be kind of days away from any sort of civilization, any sort of town, and it was lonely. Like there was just the two of us, and it was hard in a way that I didn't expect. And I think that perspective shifted my perspective on mountaineering and what you need to do to be successful in it. So anyway.
I used to get these texts from your sat-nav phone, and every text was very short because I think it was hard to type on these clunky things, and it would come with a map attached because it's definitely for emergencies. You would be like, hey, how you doing? And you would send me a map of your location. It was very funny.
So yeah, that's Maria. The last one is similar with the mountaineering, but this like crazy story, and this is probably one of the most well-known mountaineering documentaries especially like outside of kind of just a climbing community. There's a really good story here. So it's, I think, and it's very well done.
And it's a book as well.
Yeah, it's called Touching the Void. And it follows these two British climbers, Joe Simpson and Simon Yates, as they attempt the first ascent of Sierra La Grande, which is a mountain in Peru. There have been a couple of unsuccessful expeditions to this mountain, but these guys were attempting the first ascent. Now, they make it. They get to the top, but that's not really what the documentary is about. That's kind of almost like done in the first few minutes. Because the rest of the story then is on the way down.
How do you tell about this without giving spoilers?
Well, I think it's
so exciting.
Yeah, well, so basically, and on as they come down, Joe breaks his leg.
Yeah.
They are thousands of meters up and kilometers away from their camp.
Stressful.
They've run out of their rations, of their food and their gas, and he breaks his leg, which is generally accepted as a death sentence when you're up there in the mountains. The rest of the documentary is the fight for survival.
Hmm.
And maybe we leave it there?
Maybe we leave it. No, I feel like you have to give him a little more.
Well, that's what the
story
is.
Because it's controversial. There's this controversial moment.
There is a controversial moment. And that's what sparked a debate within the climbing community.
Okay, so we won't tell what it is, but essentially the controversial moment is one of them is in big trouble, and the other one, it's the choice of, do we both die, or does one of us make it home alive?
Mm.
And that moment, and we won't tell you what decision they make, but that moment is like, do you leave your partner behind because you have a better chance of survival by yourself? Even though, like, he's not bleeding out. He's got a broken leg. So, crazy. Yeah. But it's incredible. And just the human fortitude, perseverance, just
incredible.
Wow. Yeah.
It's also just really, really well made. So, it's because you can have the best story in the world, but if it's not made well, it's not worth watching. Yeah. But they get actors to actually recreate a lot of the footage.
Yeah.
And that makes it really brings it to life, and it makes it really engaging
and also enjoyable, just terrifying, because it's not just a photo. It is terrifying.
Yeah. So it's that's good. That's good. It's worth watching.
Leave it there. Mm-hmm. Move on. Woo!
Those are kind of our top five favorite climbing ones, just as a bit of honorable mentions, because there are other adventure documentaries out there. We'll mention some of our other favorites. So in terms of running, I have to mention one running one.
I feel like this is the main inspiration for Nathan's running pursuits.
I remember watching this documentary when I was at university, long before I ever got into trail running or ultra running of any sort. And I thought, wow, I'd love to do that.
Which is not a normal response to this documentary. Normally people watch this documentary and go, wow, some people are really stupid. Glad I'm not one of them. Yeah.
So I think you could put this documentary into one of two categories. Either it could be a documentary, or it could be like a dark comedy. Depending on
your perspective. Okay, we have to just tell. It is called
The Barclay Marathons, The Race That Eats Its Young. And it is the story of this infamous race, which has, since this documentary came out, has really exploded in its popularity and fame. And it's grown considerably now. And I think it's lost a lot of the original mystique, because there have been...
Mm. Well, I mean, that's what happens when you make a documentary about it.
But pretty much this race is so comical in how extremely difficult and punishing and absolutely crushing it is. And the idea is that it's about 100 miles, but no one's really sure. It might be more like 120 miles. You've got 60 hours to complete it, and while the race director claims that it's on trail, it's largely accepted that it's pretty much not on trail. And it's held in the Tennessee Mountains, and it's up one side, down the other. I think just absolutely extreme elevation. The weather is always horrendous, and it is the most difficult race on earth.
That's the claim, yeah.
And it's a very good watch. So
But you have to say, it's not just the running, it's not just the race. Like, that's almost a side note. The main attraction is this guy, this hilarious, which is not his real name.
Gary Cantrell.
Oh my goodness, we were so disappointed when we found that out. He created a character for himself. Yeah. He's hilarious. He's this redneck, he's this jolly old grandpa type character who's just hilarious. I think he just held it so that he could laugh at people. And he comes by so honestly. He's like, yeah, this is hard. Nobody will be able to do it. Mm-hmm. Tell them about kind of the race entrance and all this stuff.
So, okay, so to get into the race, I think your entry fee is $1.60 to enter this race. Considering they have thousands of entries a year, which in itself is a rather secretive process because nobody actually knows how to apply.
There's not a website.
You can't just sign up online. You have to figure out how to apply. And then once you've gotten in, once he sends you a letter of condolence, like, I'm sorry, but you've been selected to run the Barclay Marathons. And if you are what's called a Barclay Virgin, as if it's your first time, you have to bring him a number plate from your home country.
Mm-hmm.
To, along with your entrance fee to be allowed to race. Now, if you are not a Barclay Virgin, if you have run it in the past, he comes up with something that you need to give him to be able to run. And normally, he just finds something that he doesn't have a lot of. So one year, he did socks. And everyone who was running it for a second or third or however many times needed to bring him a pair of socks. I think another year, it was shirts. And this is his way of expanding his wardrobe.
Anyway, yeah, we can't give away too many of the funny things because otherwise you got to watch it for yourself. It's hilarious.
It is well worth it,
but
though.
It's very funny and it's worth a watch.
And there have been a lot of other documentaries that have been made since on the Barclay Marathons, but this was the first one and it's where it's the best place to start before kind of watching the other ones that have been made since.
Yeah.
Couple of skiing ones, just because they are awesome and so inspiring and beautiful scenery. Into the Mind is a very weird one, but it's cinematographically beautiful. It's got an epic soundtrack to it, and it follows just some really awesome skiers in BC, in Alaska, and kind of all over the place. So Into the Mind is awesome. And another one, which again pulls up this ethical question, this ethical dilemma of how much risk is acceptable, particularly for people who have families, and it's something that's inspired a lot of our conversations, hasn't it, Monica?
Yeah.
It's called McConkie, and it's follows the story of this guy Shane McConkie, who was one of he was one of the best skiers in the world, and big kind of athlete, big superstar of skiing, was pushing the envelope into what he called ski base, where he would ski off a cliff and pull a parachute and sail back down to Earth.
Like purposefully ski off a cliff.
With a parachute on his back.
Well, yeah, but yeah. Anyway.
So it's really good from kind of an ethical, you know, how much risk is too much.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly as people get older and gain more responsibility and whether they have families, and that is there a responsibility to avoid risk?
Yeah, I think that a lot of these adventure athletes retire one of two ways. Either they literally get too old to do their sport, or they get too much responsibility and all of a sudden they've got kids at home and it's not worth it to them anymore.
Or they die.
And that's the three exit routes from adventure.
I just think the only one that comes to mind, there might be a film about him, but I haven't seen. I just heard his story is Yuli Steck, who he got into speed mountaineering, which they say about mountaineers that, you know, mountaineering is one of the most dangerous activities you could possibly do. And that's if you're doing it carefully in a controlled manner with capable climbing partners. Yuli Steck, his thing was, I'm gonna solo up these intense mountains with my, you know, ice axe, crampons and so on as fast as I possibly can, try and get the fastest ascents up here, and of course eventually he fell to his death.
I think those stories can only end in one way, eventually. Like, if you keep pushing the envelope, keep pushing the envelope. And he did some amazing, amazing things before he died. And I think that's the thing about base jumping too, isn't it? Like, 100% of base jumpers die base jumping. Is the current stats.
Well, no.
No, but if you carry on base jumping, you'll probably die from it. That, like, you will. And it's amazing and people love it. And the thrill and all of this stuff. And it is possible to do it safely sometimes, which is why people keep doing it. But
Let's not go too far down this, because I think we want to have a bit more of a conversation at some point about risk and acceptable risk, because it's one of the things that we've disagreed on to an extent. So we'll table that for now and come back to it. Here are just, so those are, I think, my favorite feature length, or our favorite feature length documentaries. Just a few shorts, like kind of short films to mention. Most of these are, or half of these are available on YouTube. The other half are not.
So have fun.
The first one is not available on YouTube. It's called Wide Boys. It is comical. It is very enjoyable. So Wide Boys is Tom Whitaker and Peter Randall, mm-hmm. and it was a part of the Real Rock film. So if you have never come across Real Rock, they release every year. It's about an hour long, maybe 90 minutes long, and it has four kind of short films about climbing or mountaineering. All of them are awesome, mm-hmm. but so Wide Boys is one of my favorites from it, and it's these two Brits who take on off-width cracks, which are cracks that are too wide for a fist jam, but not wide enough to chimney to like put your whole body in. So they are
awkward.
They're so awkward.
It's the awkwardest type of climbing.
It looks like it was a battle in every sense for every single inch. And they, in this short film, take on the biggest, the burliest, and the hardest off-width climbs in America.
So they just train themselves into these specialized climbers for this weird style of climbing. Like, there's no finesse. It doesn't look good. It's not smooth. But it's funny. And they use elbows and knees and heads in ways that
all sorts.
Oh my!
Yeah. So it's really good, and again, it's done in a very kind of amusing style of way. And again, you just oftentimes would watch them and be like, like, what the heck are they doing?
A lot of yelling.
But behind it are incredible athletes. I mean, they trained for 2 years.
What did they call their basement, their pit?
The dungeon, wasn't it?
Or something like that.
They created this torture chamber underneath Tom's house, and just trained themselves into these superhuman off-width climbers and then tackled.
I feel like they just wanted to be the best at something, and they're like, oh, there's a lot of good climbers out there doing all this hard stuff. We'll pick the weirdest thing and just be good at that.
Well, I think it goes back a bit to the British climbing culture of like, it is burly, it is gritty. You do have to sacrifice your body oftentimes. And, you know, you look at the things that they've done in the Peak District. Mm-hmm. They've done some incredible climbs. Very, very difficult, very challenging. And they are at the sort of the top end of British climbing. And so they needed something new. And this was it.
This was it.
Another really good film. This one is available on YouTube. It's called La Dura Dura, which is another short from Real Rock. But this is the awesome partnership that arose between Chris Sharma and Adam Ondra. It's kind of like, what I really like about this one is it shows the passing of the baton. So Chris Sharma was kind of the James Bond of climbing last generation. Maybe not James Bond, maybe like
he was like that, leave it.
He was the cool kid of climbing. He was kind of the surfer dude of climbing of the previous generation, pushing the envelope, the hardest sport climbs out there. He was the best, mm-hmm. the coolest climber. Everyone wanted to be like Chris Sharma. Adam Ondra is the antithesis of him. He is,
we love him,
weird. He is socially awkward, he is lanky, and he doesn't care about anything other than climbing.
Oh my goodness, does he eat,
sleep, and breathe climbing. And this film shows these two guys who are equal in their ability. Sharma at the end of his career, Ondra at the beginning of his career, tackling La Dura Dura, which is Spanish for the hard hard, which is a 515C. A 515C in Spain. At the time, it was the second 515C ever to be done, and since there have been more since. But it just it shows how over a period of years the two of them worked together to climb this route together, and it's really, really good.
Which brings us to the next short, which is probably my favorite thing that I've ever seen because it's just so weird, which is called Age of Andra.
I think it's just like mouth hanging open for most of it.
Oh my goodness. It just documents Andra's rise to excellence, I guess. But
it's his quest to on-site a 515.
Yes, this is true.
So an on-site is when you turn up to a climb, you've got no prior knowledge of the beta, mm-hmm. and you climb it from bottom to top without falling.
Yeah, just absolutely clean, perfect first try. So obviously, the tricky bit about doing that is if you screw up once, well, that you have to write off that climb. And there's not that many 515s out there.
No, there's not.
I mean, there's a few. But so he had to, like, if he screws up, he has to start again, trying to find a different climb that he can on-site. And his methods are odd. He has all sorts of people helping him, and he does this visualization thing where he'll memorize the climb, and he'll just look at it, stare at it long enough, and memorize and visualize what his body will do. And then he lays on his back on a floor, and he goes through the movements.
He
acts it out, and his eyes are closed, and he's just doing this, and he grunts, and he screams, and he has all, like, his muscles are tense as if he's scaling a wall, but he's lying on his back on the floor. And this is why, like, this is where Nate says, like, he just doesn't care about what anybody thinks, because it is strange. He looks like a cat having a bad dream.
Or a seizure,
yeah, but it works for him, and he's... Mm. Absolutely incredible. And he also has the most comical sound effects. I think people have stitched together Andra falling and made, like, YouTube videos out of it, because it's just entertaining, to say the least.
Unique.
He has the vocal cords to match his climbing ability. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
But yeah, quite a funny character as well.
And then the last one that I'll mention is... Back to Alex Honnold. He is a friend called Cedar Wright, who just seems to be one of the most lovable and comedic characters in climbing. And the two of them teamed up to put out this film called Sufferfest. and they cycle through the Mojave Desert, climbing 45 of the most iconic pillars as fast as they possibly can. And the predicaments and the problems, the challenges that they face, is just really funny, and it's done in a very amusing kind of way. And it's just them hurting themselves for the camera.
For the camera. Yeah. Yeah. When you have a name like Sufferfest, that's just picking a dumb thing and going and doing it for laughs.
Knowing it's going to hurt.
Right. So that's our favorite documentaries style. So those actually happened. They follow real stories, real people doing really hard things, and somebody happened to catch it on film. I guess there's another genre of adventure films that we haven't watched as many of, because most of them are bad.
Ridiculous.
But we thought it would be worth a funny mention.
This is Hollywood.
Hollywood's take on climbing.
I think there are two, like, really, the two standout films about climbing. Firstly is Everest, which was done better.
It was
really interesting, actually. Yeah. We were quite engaged in it. Do you want to say what
no,
the story
go on,
is?
You okay. Keep going.
So Everest was all about the rise of adventure guiding up Everest, and
kind of the transition between only elite mountaineers to kind of
commercialized.
Yeah, yeah. Your average Joe could sign up, pay a lot of money to have somebody take them up Everest.
Yeah, so it's the film is based on the book Into Thin Air by John Krakauer. Because Krakauer is a journalist. He worked for Outdoor magazine, I think, for quite a long time.
So.
And has written a few books. He's quite a divisive character.
He is.
Because
people
of
love
his
him or hate him.
Opinions.
Yeah.
But so this particular expedition that the story and the film is based on was a disaster. and it led, I think it was the deadliest
year.
The single deadliest of year an event on Everest.
So it is quite a sad film, and you just see them make all sorts of decisions, and it's cringy because it just goes wrong again and again and again.
Yeah, but it's a Hollywood movie, and it's got all the entertainment.
Yeah, and it still is enjoyable, and it still is beautiful, and there are some good moments.
Yeah, there are. It's better than.
So guys,
Vertical Limit.
I feel like Vertical Limit is hilarious if you're a climber, and if you're not, you'd probably watch and go, yeah, I don't get what's the deal.
I remember my parents watching that one when I was young, and I remember going to bed and then them telling me about it the next day. Mm. And at the time, I think, oh, it's gonna crazy cool movie. Yeah, and they obviously really enjoyed it.
Which I think is why Hollywood can get away with it, because if you don't know anything about climbing, yeah, it's cool, it's adventurous, they do all these crazy things. But if you know even the slightest bit about belay techniques and how gear works, you watch it and you just think, what the heck? Did they have nobody on this film crew that knew anything about climbing?
Apparently Chris Sharma was a stunt double for it. So they had the world's best climber on set.
Which I can't even imagine how frustrating it must have been for him, because he probably, I mean, this is all guessing, but he probably was like, guys, that's not how this works. And they probably were like, shut up. It's a film. We're making it how we want. So there's just so much drama in it that is absolutely unnecessary, because it's physically impossible. And they make these situations where I don't even know, that the moment where the sister is trying to clip and she's swinging on the end of her rope, trying to connect to a bolt or something, and it's just absolutely physically impossible, and that's not how gear works. And they have these moments of gear failure that just wouldn't have happened, and all of this dramatic effect and timely deaths, and I don't even know, it's so ridiculous.
All you really need to watch is on YouTube, there is a it's called Vertical Limit Guide to Climbing.
Yeah.
And somebody's stitched together all the best bits of horrific climbing practice, and it is hilarious.
The comment section is also hilarious. I feel like I've been sucked into a few comment vortexes of people just bashing everything. But it is funny.
It is funny.
So Vertical Limit, 10 out of 10.
And that brings us to the end of our list.
Yeah. Oh, what a good time. I want to go watch them all again.
I think we will have to be a slow process of watching them all. I hope you enjoyed that.
Our little film review.
Our little film review there. And let us know what you think of any of these. If you think that there was any that we missed that, oh my goodness, you know, why didn't we include this one or that one or the other one? It's probably because we haven't watched it. And so we need to hear about it. So please let us know. Email us at picnicclimbers@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram @picnicclimbers. And we would absolutely love to hear from you. Until next time, Picnic Climbers.
That's it for now.
Bye for now.
Thanks so much for joining us today.
If you enjoyed listening along, be sure to subscribe and leave a comment on iTunes.
If you want to get in touch, follow us on Instagram @picnicclimbers or email us @picnicclimbers@gmail.com.
Until next time, Picnic Climbers.